It's Friday, and that means it's time for another Friday Week in Review. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, May the 20th. Every week at this time, we have two guests from different political viewpoints join us to debate the big political news of the week, state, national, and international, and we welcome your input, too. If there is an issue from the news this week that you would like to discuss or would like our guests to debate, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have a lot of issues to discuss today. We will talk about who's in and who's out of the race to replace U.S. Senator Herb Kohl. We will talk about the latest who's in and who's out in the Republican race for president in 2012. Voter ID passed in the state Senate yesterday, and many other state issues as well to discuss. And we, again, will welcome your input. Let me welcome our guests. Ruth Conniff is with us. She is political editor at The Progressive. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Steve Prestigard is also with us, publisher and editor of The Late Marketplace magazine, author of the Presta blog. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with state politics and the race to replace U.S. Senator Herb Kohl. Herb Kohl announced last Friday, just after our week in review, that he was not going to run for re-election. It caught some people off guard, and we've heard lots of potential candidates on both sides. And I'm wondering, starting with Steve Prestigard, is Tommy Thompson going to run for Herb Kohl's seat?
You know, I tend to think he isn't. You know, his name popped up when Jim Doyle announced he wasn't running for governor a couple of years ago, and he kind of toyed with it, and I think he kind of liked the attention, and then ultimately decided not to. The thing is, the longer he's been out of Wisconsin, the more likely it is that there are at least some voters who say, who? You, Tommy Thompson? I mean, people don't I think there's a growing number of people who actually, as hard as this is to believe, don't remember that he is the longest-serving governor in the state. But he's been in Washington, and then he came back sort of to Wisconsin, and he's kind of commuting around, I guess. The thing that Thompson is going to have that's a problem is that I think he's growing less attractive to the people who are more likely to vote in primaries because he's, you know, he's got a number of negatives from the 14 years he was governor, because when you are governor for 14 years, you're going to have some. And then he's also trying to play, seems like he's trying to play it both ways on, you know, issues like Obamacare. And of course, that's Obamacare to conservatives is kind of like Tribbles to Klingons. It's something you don't want to put together. So I tend to doubt really that he's going to.
Yeah. Tommy Thompson might be too liberal, Ruth Conniff.
Well, yeah, it shows how far to the right the Republican Party, and particularly our state Republican Party, has moved, that the Club for Growth is putting out these ads bashing Tommy Thompson as this huge tax and spend liberal and for having the temerity to support things like Badger Care, which was one of his proudest achievements. I mean, he did, you know, he was not somebody who wanted to burn down the house. He wanted to get along with people. He was very proud of what he did in Wisconsin for children and the elderly and extending health care to people who needed it. And the Republican Party has really taken a hard right turn against all of those things. So it's, you know, I think it says more about the party than it does about Tommy that, you know, he sort of is where he was for so many years, and yet they're now suddenly rejecting him. He's still the biggest name in Wisconsin Republican politics prior to, you know, Paul Ryan and Scott Walker, and I think maybe he sees those guys on the national stage and he thinks, hey, why not me?
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, I agree with Steve that I don't think Tommy, I don't think he's going to end up running. I mean, he's a big threat. He was a big threat when he flirted with getting into the race against Russ Feingold, and then he came to the big Tea Party rally in Madison and he gave this speech where nobody knew if he was going to announce or not. And right at the, he was a huge stem winder. He was getting really excited. And right at the part where he would have announced towards the end, he lapsed into a recitation of the old Irish poem, May the Rose Rise to Meet You. He had clearly stuck in the place where he was going to make his announcement. And I think basically his family wasn't behind his run. They didn't want to go through it. And he used to gripe openly about not wanting to live in Washington, not liking the commute, and most of all, wanting to make some money in the private sector. Yeah. So I kind of tend to think that he's got ambition. He has been a big figure in state politics. He thinks, what the heck, I could be me. And then at the end, I suspect, like Steve, that he's going to think, eh.
Yeah. So
it doesn't help to be backed by your own party.
Let me have Ruth turn it around to the Democrats now, coming back. Who seems to be interested? Who would be a strong candidate in terms of the Democratic ticket, Ruth Conniff?
Well, I talked to Tammy Baldwin yesterday, and of course, she's the first person who really seems to have said something that the news media picked up about running, and she has not made her decision. She said that she's going to really look at the whole thing carefully, and she's going to try to make a decision soon because she knows that it's not going to do anybody any good for her to take a long time about it. So she got a lot of progressive types in Madison really excited when she talked about running, and you know, I think that she's an excellent, experienced politician and campaigner, and she saved Russ Feingold's seat for him a couple of times just because her organization was so good with UW students in Madison, and we'll see whether she could take that statewide. Of course, you know, the other name that everybody talks about is Russ Feingold, mm-hmm. because he was the senator, and he has the kind of name recognition and goodwill and crossover appeal that could really make him a formidable candidate. But he has said through a spokesman that he's not thinking about 2012. And, you know, Democrats want him to run both for governor and for Senate, and he hasn't made any noises that seem to indicate he's going to do that.
Mm-hmm. And, Steve, who else is interested on the Republican end?
You know, that's an interesting question because there's a couple of names that come up, and yet they're kind of, you know, sort of names. There's a professor at Marquette University, John McAdams, who said last week that he doesn't think that the GOP candidate has even been named just yet. It's kind of easier to mention who can be, a Democrat in the race. Ron Kind, for instance, I think is somebody who really should get in the race because unlike Feingold, unlike Tom Barrett and several other Democrats, he's one who's recently won an election. On the Republican side, J.B. Van Hollen has won a pair of statewide elections. The only thing with him is that I'm not sure that people actually know who he is all that much. Attorney General is not, strangely enough, not necessarily a hugely visible visible position in this state. I can tell you the people who shouldn't, and I'm guessing won't run, or one of them, and that would be Mark Newman. Newman is kind of in the same position as a couple of people who are named for this, Kathleen Falk and Tom Barrett, in that he has now lost a pair of statewide races. And, you know, I think, you know, kind of similar to Tommy Thompson, Newman is kind of getting up there in age. He is a person that a lot of Republicans, frankly, don't like. It doesn't seem to have the personality to campaign very well. And I think he has practically zero crossover appeal also, which has to be a consideration with all this. Ultimately, it wouldn't shock me if, history doesn't repeat itself necessarily, but it would not shock me if the person who ends up the Republican nominee is somebody that, if you mention that person's name right now, you'd say, who? You know, it could be somebody that has no connection to politics whatsoever.
Well, here we go in the news this morning. Move over, Ron Johnson. Another businessman is thinking about running for the U.S. Senate from Wisconsin. Tim Sullivan, the CEO of Bucyrus International in South Milwaukee, has said that he has received calls to run for Senate. So there's somebody like that, Steve?
Yeah, and actually that would be, I would argue that could be the case either on the Republican or the Democrat side, because I think what the Democrats would like, and frankly would be helpful to have, would be their own answer to Ron Johnson. Obviously not somebody who reads Atlas Shrugged, but somebody who has a record of accomplishment outside of politics. And by the way, in 1988, that was Herb Kohl. So, I don't know, maybe history does repeat itself 24 years later.
Yeah. And, Ruth, is there anybody like that on the Democratic side?
Well, actually, the person you just mentioned could be either. He hasn't declared.
Oh, we don't know. Yeah. Yeah, I guess we don't.
Which I think, you know, in some ways is not exactly a huge mark in his favor. I mean, at least with Ron Johnson, you knew right out of the gate what you were getting in terms of ideology. And, you know, if you're running a company in South Milwaukee and nobody knows your name, and on top of it, you don't have any particular political ideology that's identifiable, I'm not sure that that's the way to start the race.
Except that I think, you know, what we've seen over the last couple of election cycles is that people hate politicians, and it's not gotten any better. You know, there are periods where, you know, the designated next person up ends up getting the nomination, but we're in a period where people are very cynical about politics. They're cynical about individual politicians, and I think that this is still the 2012 still could end up the year of the outsider.
Well, it'll be interesting for Wisconsin to see. You know, I mean, I think some of the people on the Democratic side, like Tom Barrett, again, I think is not likely. He didn't seem super energized by his run for governor, and I don't really see him wanting to run for Senate. But I think what would be really good for Wisconsin would be to see somebody who's not an absolute far-right candidate, because when you look at what has happened in our state, it's really head-spinning. I mean, we went from Democratic governor, Democratic control of both houses, two Democratic senators who are pretty progressive, to this, you know, national leadership from the very right wing of the Republican Party. And, you know, if Herb Kohl's seat goes that way too, it's kind of astounding. And it sort of flies in the face of what you're saying about ideology and not liking politicians. I mean, for so long we had such a civilized, friendly state. And it would be nice to see a little bit of that restored in this Senate race.
We are going to move on from the Senate race to the race for president. And we will talk about who's in, who's out on the Republican side. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Ruth Conniff, political editor of The Progressive, and Steve Prestegard, who is author of the Presta blog, and we welcome your input during this edition of the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 21 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, May the 20th. Coming up after 4, it's your views on the news, your opportunity to call in with what you think was the week's most significant news story, your views on the news with Ben Marins and his guest after 4 this afternoon. This is the Friday Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different political viewpoints. Ruth Conniff and Steve Prestegard are with me today, and we are reviewing all the top political news stories of the week. Let's talk about the latest in the race for president in 2012. We learned this week that Mike Huckabee will not run for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination, and Donald Trump. The Donald says he's not running either. So, Ruth Conniff, are you disappointed?
Well, I think comedians everywhere are disappointed about Donald Trump's withdrawal, but honestly, I'm not sure they could have milked it that much longer. And I think, really, it was President Obama who finally did him in at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, because it was just a devastating takedown that the president did of the Donald, even as he was in the process of dispatching the Navy SEALs to take out Osama bin Laden. And he went through this long discussion of how he admired Trump's fortitude in choosing between chefs on Celebrity Chef. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous. And it's fine to me. It's fine that he's gone. Mike Huckabee, I've always enjoyed, because I think he's got an honest and direct and interesting perspective, and he's fun to listen to. And so, you know, his departure takes away kind of a candidate who's run multiple times and, you know, injected some interest into the race and some populist excitement, but was never likely, finalist out of the primaries. So I don't know that those two really affect the fundamental problem that the Republicans face this year, which is that they just don't have a credible candidate yet. And the fact that Sarah Palin is flirting with getting back in is really not a great sign.
Yeah, and Newt Gingrich is is stumbling right out of the gate, isn't he, Steve Prestigard?
that's funny to hear what Ruth said about Huckabee, because to be honest about it, I would not have voted for him in any primary. I would have had a serious problem voting for him in the general election. The combination of social conservative and economic non-conservative really doesn't cut it for me. Trump, that's almost a punchline, basically, isn't it? As far as Sarah Palin goes, the reason that I like Sarah Palin is because I hear comments like from Ruth that, you know, the Sarah Palin just drives liberals completely up the wall, and that's very enjoyable to watch. I don't think she's going to get the nomination, however. If you were looking at a candidate, I have probably two favorites, neither of which probably will end up getting the nomination. But I like Mitch Daniels, the governor of Indiana, who actually has a governing record that is not perfect, but reasonably conservative. And the other one, talking about a dark horse in a sense, is Herman Cain, who has been kind of running a little bit under the radar campaign, but has really impressed people. He was, from what I saw, considered the winner of the debate that was in, I believe it was, Iowa last week? So I like what he says. I don't think he has any chance of getting the nomination because not enough people know who he is. But just from my perspective, I'd have to, I'd say 1-2 in some order would be Daniels and Cain.
Yeah, well, talk a little bit, though, about Newt Gingrich, who criticized okay. Paul Ryan's plans for Medicare, and then said, I think he then blamed the media, but he had a rough week, didn't he?
It's entirely his fault, because, Newt is a really smart guy, and he has very interesting ideas, or at least he used to have very interesting ideas. You know, back in the 1990s, he was talking about the urgent need for Medicare reform, and now suddenly he becomes a politician. This is, by the way, somebody who hasn't been elected to anything in, close to 15 years now. He's got just way too much gap ability in order to be able to get elected. He's also got a ton of negatives, 10 tons of negatives. So he's one of these guys who's a smart guy. He's got a national profile, but he turns people off. And as we've seen, you can't turn people, viscerally turn people off and get elected. So honestly, I'm not sure why he even bothered to run. And, he certainly blew himself up with conservatives after what he said about Ryan's Medicare plan.
Mm-hmm. Ruth Conniff, how about Newt's comments on Medicare?
Well, yeah, it's really amazing not only that he wasn't politically savvy enough not to make the comments, but then after having made them, that he seemed so desperate to take them back. I mean, he just fell all over himself, including saying that anybody who tried to use any clip from Meet the Press in an ad against him was automatically lying because he'd already said that he took it back. So it just, it was a really spectacular immolation right out of the gate there. And, of course, what he said was true. this is the problem with having somebody like Paul Ryan as the chief intellectual of your party, is that you get people who actually look at this stuff honestly and they say, well, this isn't going to work. This is a complete disaster. And then, they blow up with the base. So, Newt should know what politics are about by now, and he should be able to get with the program. I think the problem of having the serial adultery and the fact that it drove him from office in the past, and also, as Steve said, that he's just, he is a figure from the 1990s who has not had the stature that he had then for many, many years. And so he's hilarious. But the Republicans are fielding a lot of hilarious candidates so far, and I think they're hoping that Mitch Daniels gets in the race.
Let's take a call from Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Joy and guests. Now, I feel the story of the week has to be Representative Nancy Pelosi coming to Wisconsin to defend Medicare. Now, I read that as of June 2009, the U.S. Treasury owes Medicare $342 billion and $2.3 trillion to Social Security. So my question is, why would you borrow from Medicare to give oil companies a tax break? And I think they ought to keep their hands off of Medicare and cut the oil subsidies.
All right. Well, a quick react to Linda's proposal, Steve Prestigard.
Why don't we? I'm fine with cutting oil subsidies. I'm also fine with cutting taxes on productive companies that, by the way, happen to be part of many people's retirement plans. This is not a case of you do A and thus you can't do B in this case.
And what do you say about this, Ruth?
I think the caller is absolutely right, and I think she makes a point that increasingly resonates with people, especially here in Wisconsin, that these huge tax breaks for corporations and, you know, coupled with an austerity program for seniors and people who rely on Social Security and Medicare is just, it's outrageous. So I think that's absolutely right. The Center in Wisconsin Strategy at the UW just put out an alternative budget this week where they talk about how rolling back tax cuts for corporations in Wisconsin could take us right out of the fiscal crisis that's been an excuse for the kinds of draconian cuts that we see being shoved through our legislature now.
Steve.
You know, increasing taxes on companies is going to do nothing but increasing prices on products. And the economy is being as shaky as it is right now, and I have personal experience with this. You are not going to go into prosperity, real life prosperity, by increasing taxes and therefore increasing prices. Because when you raise taxes on business, the only people who pay taxes on business are the business's customers, not the companies.
You know, we're talking about tax breaks that Scott Walker put into his budget right out of the black. So we're not even talking about an increase, a potential increase in taxes. We're talking about whether or not we're going to declare a fiscal crisis, but we're going to give away hundreds of millions of dollars in corporate tax breaks and then say, well, you know what, we really can't afford not to make $800 million cut to our school system, to shut down schools, to cut programs, to leave people stranded without health care. Because really, businesses just need to pay less taxes in our state. I just think it's a really tough sell to ordinary voters.
Let's talk a little bit about Nancy Pelosi's visit to Wisconsin. She did criticize Ryan's Medicare plan. She said that this plan would abolish Medicare as we know it. We cannot let that happen. One reporter said, well, what's the Democrats' plan? And it's called Medicare, is what she said. Ruth Conniff, is Medicare going to be a huge issue in these campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Paul Ryan's plan is really astounding, and that Medicare is such a popular program that even the Tea Partiers used to hold signs that said, keep your government hands off my Medicare. I mean, even people who have this ideology, sort of knee-jerk opposition to the idea of government running a healthcare system, have had a very positive experience with Medicare. And so threatening that is really hitting people very, very deeply, and it happens to be people who vote. You know, it's really, you know, because retirees vote in large numbers, it is a politically really dangerous thing to do to threaten Medicare and Social Security, unlike AFDC, which, the other pillar of the New Deal, which it was easier to eliminate, frankly, because you were talking about a group of people who were not voting in large enough numbers to be a huge political threat. But going after Social Security and Medicare, boy, that is, I think that is going to cost the Republicans.
Yeah, so is that Paul Ryan plan a loser for Republicans, Steve?
It is interesting to note that, first off, the real, you know, people have talked about Social Security being in crisis. Medicare is in much faster occurring crisis. And, you know, I look at this as, are you concerned about a program that was created in the 1960s, or are you concerned about the future? There is no question that whoever ends up as president after the 2012 election, or Obama or some other Republican, is going to have to deal with this. Congress is going to have to deal with this. This is, and let's remember, Nancy Pelosi is the representative of, you know, somebody who took over in Congress and promptly managed to get her congressional majority to evaporate within the space of just two terms in Congress. But Medicare reform, you know, Paul Ryan gets all this negative flack about about his plan from non-conservatives, but it is a plan, and there doesn't seem to be any better plan out there. And I noticed that, you know, Nancy Pelosi, it doesn't even appear, based on your comments, doesn't even appear to believe that there's a problem. And that's insane. To look at the numbers of what's happening with Medicare, with the increasing number of people getting it, and to say that there's no problem with Medicare financing, that's just nuts.
Ruth?
Well, I mean, you know, if there's anything nuts, it's Paul Ryan's plan, right? I mean, the idea that this is going to save America from bankruptcy, because if this ridiculous logic that by making these huge tax cuts we're going to increase revenue has just been basically laughed at by every serious economist. I mean, it's, you know, he also is going to he's going to give seniors vouchers that aren't going to cover the cost of medical insurance, and the medical insurance itself is no longer going to be, you know, you're not going to be in a large school of fish. You're going to be your own little tiny fish with this little voucher. And, you know, people know, I mean, you know, go to Paul Ryan's appearances throughout Wisconsin and look around. There are a lot of older women, you know, grandmas in sneakers holding signs that are just outraged by this because it is such a serious threat. So, I just think that to treat that plan as in any way serious is really, you know, it's just ignoring reality.
By the way, next week, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, will push a Senate vote on the budget cutting plan that would revamp Medicare. And we'll do more on this issue next week. Let's move on to yesterday. President Obama gave this address on the uprisings in the Arab world and U.S. policy toward the Middle East and North Africa. And I'm wondering, just briefly, we spent our entire last hour with a guest talking about what he had to say. But Ruth Conniff, what do you think was the most significant news from President Obama's speech?
Well, I think the most significant news was that he finally declared U.S. support for what everybody knows is going to have to be the solution to conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, which is a return to the 1967 borders of Israel with some land swaps in areas outside Jerusalem. And by throwing the weight of the United States government behind that idea, which is, you know, a widely accepted idea in Israel and, you know, not by the Likud party, but by people who are serious about peace, he put some pressure on Israel. And I think it was a tactical move because in September at the UN, it is very possible that the Palestinians will be able to get support from that body for this same idea. And so, and Israel is planning to object strenuously to that. Now its main and most powerful ally is saying, you got to get there first. You have to, that's where you need to end up. And so it really changes the dynamic, and it pushes Israel to get serious about negotiating peace along these lines, which for so many years everyone has known has to be the solution.
Steve?
Well, I guess my first thought after reading the speech was wondering when President Obama is going to replace Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State with George W. Bush, because there's not a whole lot of difference between the Bush foreign policy and what the president said yesterday, including the parts about Israel and Palestine. The thing is, of course, that, you know, Israel is ultimately responsible for its own security. Israel is, at least until Saddam Hussein was eliminated from the planet, Israel was the only democracy in the Middle East. And Israel has experienced threats to its very existence since literally the day it started in 1948. You know, part of me says that it's pretty futile to expect that you're going to get peace in the Middle East simply because of 2,000 years of past experience. I also think it's interesting, and actually the thing that I like the best about the speech is the fact that he actually made comments about expanding trade with the Middle East. You know, he's claimed over the last few years that he believes in free trade. He's supported free trade much more in theory than in actual practice. But, you know, if you're going to improve, and you know, you talk about a real change in the Middle East, if you're going to improve the Middle East, one of the things you're going to have to do is make them less dependent on oil and expand economies beyond merely oil. And so for him to bring that up is, I thought, that was really maybe the actual most significant thing. Everybody's talked about Israel and Palestine for decades without anything happening. But talking about expanding economies could be of real, actual, lasting significance.
We're going to take a short break. We have the Week in Review quiz coming up, and then we will focus a lot on state issues, policy issues, moving through the state legislature, including the passage yesterday of voter ID. So stay with us here on the Week in Review. You can bring up a topic or provide some input on a topic at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ruth Conniff is with us, political editor at The Progressive, and Steve Prestigard is also with us, publisher and editor of The Late Marketplace Magazine and author of the Prestablog. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time for our Week in Review quiz. This week, the Wisconsin Department of Tourism rolled out its new marketing campaign for the summer. What it will not include is the slogan, Live Like You Mean It, which was unveiled in 2009 and promptly made fun of. If you were listening during our 6 o'clock hour today when we talked with Tourism Secretary Stephanie Klett, you should get this. What is the name of the department's new campaign? What is the name of the new campaign, marketing campaign, for the Wisconsin Department of Tourism? If you think you know, want to guess, want to have a chance to win one of the books that we featured on the program this week, you can call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll choose a winner from all of the correct answers and announce that at the end of the program. And we'll only give you about 5 minutes or so to guess. All right, well, let's move on during this edition of the Week in Review. We are talking with Steve Prestigard and Ruth Conniff during this edition of the Week in Review, and we'll move on to some state issues, including Republicans yesterday approving voter ID in the state Senate. This requires people to show a photo ID at the polls. Democrats in the Senate protested how the proceedings were being conducted, and 8 of them refused to vote on voter ID. Well, Ruth, kind of your reaction to the state of Wisconsin. It looks like we're going to have to show a photo ID at the polls before we vote.
Yeah, I think all Wisconsinites should go to Wisconsin Eye and watch the video of that process. That it was such an amazing spectacle of Republican contempt for democracy. And to see Mike Ellis standing there as the president of the Senate, chomping on his gum with his dark sunglasses, shutting down debate, and shouting at Fred Risser, the oldest member of the Senate who served there for so many decades, to sit down and shut up, really showed you what this group of Republicans in our legislature is all about. First of all, the bill itself solves a non-existent problem. There have been 11 cases of fraud in the last election in Wisconsin, and they were felons voting and problems with absentee ballots, neither of which has anything to do with voter ID. And this is really all about trying to make it harder for people who tend to vote Democratic to vote. There's the residency requirement. You have to live in your home for 28 days and be able to prove it to vote. It has nothing to do with voter fraud. It is, you know, fraud, for starters, is not a huge problem. Secondly, this bill doesn't solve the problem. We become the 9th state in the whole United States of America to have this requirement, which is, it's like a poll tax. It's an obstacle to people exercising their constitutional right to vote. But furthermore, just go online, go to Wisconsin Eye, and watch that process. Just the incredible contempt, you know, the 1 hour of debate, very arbitrary, and then just the complete and total contempt of the Republicans for the democratic process and for the voter and for democracy in our state. I mean, this is really such an aggressive takeover of government by people who want to destroy it.
Steve Prestigard.
Okay, let's see here. First off, it's not a poll tax because the IDs are free if necessary. It is interesting that Ruth seems to think that even though you need an ID, or not just Ruth, people who are opposed to this, you know, you need an ID to buy cold medicine, which I think is absurd. You need to buy to get an ID to cash a check, get on an airplane, and yet you do not need an ID to vote. I've failed to see, I have yet to see, why this is such an enormous objection for people that you have to prove that you are who you are when you are voting. The truth of the matter is that if there is one case of voter fraud, that's one too many, because you have immediately negated the vote of somebody who has, you know, who is legitimately able to vote. You know, Joanne Kloppenburg is dragging us through this just idiotic Supreme Court recount because she said that we need to have confidence in our elections. Well, how about having confidence that the person who is voting is actually the person that the voter says he or she is, and instead of somebody who's trying to vote twice, as this happened in different states, or is trying to mess up the process.
Yeah.
I have yet to hear an objection to voter ID that is actually a real live valid objection, as far
as I then know. You have forgotten the entire civil rights movement in the United States of America. Literacy tests, poll taxes, these were all efforts to suppress black voter turnout. And this is going to have the same effect, as Senator Lena Taylor put it so eloquently on the Senate floor yesterday. This is voter intimidation, this is voter discouragement, voter confusion, voter suppression. You can't have somebody vouch for you at the polls anymore that you are who you say you are. And furthermore, there's no constitutional right to buy beer or Sudafed. There is a constitutional right to vote. The elderly, African Americans, low-income people who do not have this kind of ID, it is another step that they have to take to get to the polls and cast their vote. They will be turned away from the polls. Students who have not lived where in their current home for 28 days, the fact that you can't vote a straight party ticket anymore, these are all efforts to make sure that the Republicans hang on to power, and to say that it is about anything else is completely dishonest.
Steve, let me get a caller in, and then you can respond to both. Dave and Wanakee, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Steve, Republicans have been losing at the polls regularly. They've tried voter caging. They've tried redistricting. Now they've got this voter ID thing. When you guys get your butts kicked in the next election, how will you up the ante? How will you discourage more Democrats from voting?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that the Republicans got their butts kicked at the polls last fall, did they, Steve?
Let's see. They got control of both houses of the legislature. They have every constitutional office except for Secretary of State. That doesn't strike me as a real butt-kicking. And just to clarify the caller, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a member of a political party. But having said that, you know, I'm not aware that there is anything that that says that a voting process has to have absolutely no barrier at all. I'm not aware, for instance, that people who are not 18 years old are able to vote. That's a barrier right there. The other thing is, Ruth mentioned about, you know, the elderly not being able to vote. Let's remember that the elderly are the highest percentage of people who vote in this country. I don't think, you know, they haven't had any problems voting before, regardless of whether
they
could.
And therefore, when they have to show ID that they don't have, they won't have a problem. I mean, that doesn't even make sense.
They're the highest percentage of voters.
Are going to have trouble. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. They haven't had problems so far, so we're going to put up this huge barrier, and now they continue not to have problems? No. They, you know, the Republicans know. The problem with the Republicans is that their argument is, we need low voter turnout so we can win. And this is a way of achieving that. Lower voter turnout, particularly among people who don't have a lot of money, among students. You know, people who are energized to go to the polls and vote for President Obama now will not be voting a straight party ticket, so that can save some down ballot seats for Republicans. I mean, this is just a completely cynical move to suppress voter turnout, particularly among groups that traditionally vote Democratic, and to, as I said, to solve a non-problem. This doesn't even address the tiny amount of fraud that has been uncovered in Wisconsin.
It
doesn't address it at all.
Steve, you get a last word on this issue, and then we need to move on to other issues.
So when you're talking about low voter turnout elections that Republicans won, that they can't win low voter turnout elections, I assume you're referring to 2004. Oh, wait a minute. 2004, Bush got reelected, and Republicans maintained both houses of Congress. So
yes,
I guess that's not really, to say the Republicans can't win low high turnout elections, that's not true. That is simply not true.
The more people vote, the fewer Republicans win. It is absolutely consistent. When you have high voter turnout, Republicans lose. And when you have low voter turnout, Republicans do better. And particularly if you can target black people in Milwaukee and keep them away from the polls, Wisconsin Republicans do better. And this is exactly what they're trying to achieve. They got into office, and they immediately began pursuing ways of hanging on to power by suppressing the vote. And again, I have to tell people, if, you know, whatever you think about the ins and outs of this issue, go to Wisconsin Eye, watch how they treat the process, how they treat their colleagues in the legislature, and how they ram this thing through. There is no respect for just basic democracy in the state Republican Party in Wisconsin right now. And it's a shame, and it's appalling. And honestly, I think a lot of Wisconsin Republicans are embarrassed by it.
All right, let's move on to some other issues, including the Joint Finance Committee this week cutting funding for Planned Parenthood. Steve Prestigard, why do that?
Well, I will say that Planned Parenthood has been somewhat mischaracterized in this whole debate. But the problem is that Planned Parenthood lost the PR battle a long, long time ago. Abortions are only, from what I understand, 3% of their procedures and maybe 13% of their revenues. However, Planned Parenthood has really failed to present itself as, in the public opinion, anything much more than an abortion provider. You know, there's a rule, the golden rule of politics. Lee Dreyfus said, he who has the gold makes the rules. And if you're going to take government money, the government gets to decide where it goes. And if you look at opinion polls dating back deep into the 1970s, polls have consistently stated that people don't want government money spent on abortion. And that includes people who are, in fact, supporters of abortion rights. We're not just talking about, you know, anti-abortion people. Even the people who favor abortion rights still do not want their tax dollars being spent on providing abortion. And Planned Parenthood needs to figure out a way that they can get government funding and not have that issue come up.
Ruth Cunniff.
Well, Planned Parenthood currently spends no government money on abortion. It is illegal to spend government money on abortion, and that has been the case for a long time. So, first of all, I mean, it's obfuscation, and it's deliberate obfuscation to say funding Planned Parenthood is funding abortion. It is not. None of the tax dollars that go to Planned Parenthood go for abortion, which is 3% of what they do. On the other hand, they serve 73,000 women in Wisconsin, and for 60% of those women, they are the only health care provider. So this is going to take a huge, huge toll on Wisconsin women who get pap smears and basic checkups, basic reproductive health services through Planned Parenthood. And most of all, what's most cynical and hypocritical about it is that they dispense birth control. And the Wisconsin legislature specifically said that they can no longer serve men. So if you're an opponent of abortion, it seems to me that it is a dollar well spent on Planned Parenthood to prevent unintended pregnancies. It's just, it's ridiculous. And I think that the cynicism of this is really evident when you look at somebody like Alberta Darling, the Republican senator who used to be on Planned Parenthood's board, who now has reversed herself and tries to present this as perfectly fine. She knows the toll that this is going to take on the many, many women, the 73,000 Wisconsin women who get their health care from Planned Parenthood and prevent abortions by using birth control provided by Planned Parenthood.
We need to move on to some other issues, and we'll do a quick lightning round here and just brief responses on a lot of other issues in the state capitol. Republican leaders in the legislature say they don't want to make cuts to senior care and recycling, which were part of Governor Walker's budget proposal. So the governor may not get cuts to senior care and recycling as he wanted. Why not, Steve Prestigard?
Well, let's remember that that he has the great big red veto pen, which is the most powerful veto pen in the country. So I'm not sure he isn't going to get what he wants. The problem is that suddenly the Department of Revenue, I believe it was, came up with what they think is $636 million more. And so now suddenly the legislature is running around to spend an amount of money that doesn't exist yet. And I think they're making a tremendous mistake by increasing spending on anything because of the true fiscal situation in this state, which is, in fact, much worse than people are reporting.
Yeah. Ruth?
This was a one bright spot this week, and it was really a triumph of democracy because seniors turned out in huge numbers, and Republican legislators caved, and they basically said, okay, the voter opposition to the cuts to senior care is so overwhelming that we are not going to stand with Walker on this one. And this is what you see on many of these issues as voters become aware of what's going on and they make their voices heard. And it's very similar on the schools issue. The Republicans start to get wobbly because Walker's agenda is so radical. They're pushing this stuff through so fast that people aren't hearing about it. When they do hear about it and they get outraged, I think you're seeing a real cracking up of Walker's support in the state legislature. Mm-hmm.
Republican state lawmakers are considering a sweeping education plan that would allow the use of test scores to discipline teachers, among a lot of other changes. What do you think of these changes, Ruth Cunniff?
Well, I watched the hearings on this, and I think it's really interesting to see Luther Olson, who's the chair of the Senate Education Committee, struggle with the potential damage that he's going to be doing to the schools in his own district with a lot of these provisions. He's now arguing that this is all optional. We're just giving people options. It's about local control. And that language is ironic because, of course, a lot of what the Republicans are pushing through in their education agenda is the exact opposite of local control. It is the state telling Milwaukee that it can no longer have residency requirements for teachers, that we're going to have a statewide system of charter schools that's going to suck all the per-pupil spending out of the local, little tiny local schools in rural districts and potentially close those schools and ruin those towns. I mean, the outpouring on this issue, listening to the testimony, is really powerful. And so I think with this latest round, you know, they're softening their language, but it is very possible that they're going to push through some of these most extreme provisions. And, you know, I think that they're going to pay. I mean, that's why there is an energized recall effort against people like Luther Olson.
Mm-hmm. Steve Prestigard.
Well, first off, the recall election is against Luther Olson is going to fail. I can guarantee that. I know he's got a candidate, but Luther Olson has never lost a general election, and I don't think now. But back to this. What this is doing is requiring, or it is allowing school districts to actually force teachers to be accountable for their work. I think if you talk to people who are in the real world, they will be shocked to know that you cannot discipline a teacher based on the test scores of his or her students. How are you supposed to tell if the teacher is effective or not? And again, it doesn't say you have to. It says that it brings an option. It brings the option. You can evaluate teachers based on how their students are doing.
We're going to have to leave it there. We'll talk more about this issue and more in our State Capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. Time now to reveal the big winner of our Week in Review quiz question. What is the name of the Department of Tourism's new summer marketing campaign? It is Picture the Fun, and Diane in Appleton answered that correctly. Congratulations, Diane. We'll be in touch, and we will send you one of the many books we featured on the program this week. Travelers in this Picture the Fun campaign are encouraged to take pictures of themselves somewhere in Wisconsin, a chance to win prizes and see their photographs on digital billboards. The campaign also includes TV ads, one of which features Henry Winkler, better known as the Fonz from the show Happy Days. Yeah, there we go. I wish I had time to ask you, Ruth and Steve, any Wisconsin getaway plans planned for this summer? Going anywhere, Ruth?
Yeah, we're going to go camping for 3 days on Lake Michigan. I'm really excited.
That sounds good. What about you, Steve?
Well, the world is supposed to end tomorrow.
I forgot.
We haven't made any plans just yet. I think we're waiting for summer weather to actually occur before we start making plans.
You and me both. Well, I hope that you have fun, whatever those plans may be. I hope both of you plan to be back with us here on the Week in Review in the future. Thanks to Ruth Conniff, who is political editor at The Progressive, and Steve Prestigard, who is author of the Presta blog, for being our guest this week for the Week in Review. And thanks to Rob Ferret for producing this hour. Thanks to Michelle Good for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.